Spoiler alert!
So, plotline for Aether Revolt. Jace turns up on the plane, and a mysterious, monk-like inventor at the fair tests his blood and discovers he has more Medichlorians than any other planeswalker, and is in fact the father of all planeswalkers.
Get out your tinfoil hats, everybody.
Speaking of Midichlorian,
So
what do we actually know about Supreme Leader Snoke? We don't actually know he has Force powers.
We know he has a stupid name, and we know he's trained Kylo Ren.
Yeah.
So presumably, if he's trained Kylo Ren in the ways of the Force, he probably has Force powers.
He does seem to be a human.
Maybe. He might be like a Duros or something. He's got a weird bone structure for a human.
He might be a human who's got pretty messed up.
Yeah, something's taken a good old swipe at his face, hasn't he?
Yeah. And he has a personal vendetta against Han Solo and the Solo clan.
You mean
right?
Han Solo.
Yeah, he was angry when he said that name. So, here's what I think. His complexion looks like he took a bath in a vat of acid, right?
Well, that and he's a big fan of The Cure.
And his skull looks like it's been partially crushed.
Hmm.
And the size of his hologram suggests he's compensating for something.
Yeah. But where would you take a bath in a vat of acid and get your skull crushed at the same time? Maybe in the belly of a sarlacc?
Oh. Are we hearing the birth of a new amazing fan theory?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know how Boba Fett was a special version of the Jango Fett clone?
That's true. He didn't age like other people. He aged slower.
Yeah. Maybe he got injected with a bunch of midichlorians. And you know how Luke and Leia can sense each other because they're related and they're both Force-sensitive?
Yeah.
What if you're Force-sensitive and you sense thousands and thousands of clones of yourself getting killed in battle?
Hey, Nate Burgess, I was wondering, what are midichlorians?
Well, Timmy, midichlorians are magically little pixie dust that give you Force powers when they're in your blood.
So you're saying, rather than being an all-encompassing mystical force that penetrates all life forms and is equal to everyone, some people are more sensitive to it, actually...
That pixie dust is everywhere, man.
If my blood is pure, I'm a better person than
hey,
you.
Hey, whoa, 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 whoa. Slow down there. Slow down there. So yeah, Snoke is Boba Fett is what I'm saying.
I'm Sean Watson.
I'm Nate Burgess.
And once again, he is...
Nick Jaragrulski.
And we are Commanderin. Play that funky music, black, white, green, red, and blue, boy.
Commanderin.
Hey, thanks for listening, everyone. You might be wondering, where is your favorite bearded, wax-mustachioed host of the show? Well, he has got a new job. Are we allowed to say where he's working, Nate?
Nope.
Nope, he's got a top-secret job, which is genuinely very cool, and he's having to move house and stuff. So while he's away, we've got Mr. Jaragrulski filling in the spot, because we needed someone who's... insanely in love with the color green and likes to argue that it's the best thing regardless of the evidence and facts put in front of him.
I only like to argue facts, Sean. I'm sorry.
You can prove anything with facts, can't you, Nick?
That's how it works.
Those damn scientists. Thanks for listening, though, everybody. We're going to put a spotlight on the community issues, but never, ever, ever talk about three banned topics. Religion, politics... and Hearthstone. Remember to head over and join us on our Patreon community at patreon.com/CommanderinMTG. And you can donate as little as $1 a show.
A buck is a dollar, is that right? Is that a dollar?
Yep.
A dollar a show. Think of it, gang. Now, this week, we've got a wonderful show lined up for you. We're going to talk about Kaladesh. Oh, yeah.
We're going to talk about the cards.
Yes, we are. We're not going to introduce Nick again because this is number four, Nick. You're officially our most repeated guest.
No, I think I'm tied with Jason Ault, aren't I? He did two-parters.
Yeah, Jason cheated, though, you see. Two-parters. Yeah, get in there. Fight, fight, fight.
I'm legit.
What Jason loves, right, if you go on Reddit and Twitter and just sort of send him abusive tweets, he loves that. Go do that.
Everyone loves that.
Oh, I particularly love it. Particularly love it. So we're not going to introduce you, Nick. If you don't know who Nick is, he's a good friend of the show, and he's been here a while. So we're going to talk about Kaladesh this week. Are we all excited about this set, fellas?
Yeah, we are.
Okay, so we're going to go over the legendary creatures that are in Kaladesh. We're going to look at our top five picks each and just discuss them. And we're also just going to have a little quick overview of what we think of the set and how it's going to impact Commander. So before we start looking at the cards individually, just very quickly, what were your first impressions of the set when it all got spoiled, Nate?
Vroom, vroom. Smash vehicles.
So you're going to have a pod race. That's what you're telling me.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I thought. I know Nate well enough to know that he's impressed. Nick, what was your first impressions of Kaladesh when the set got spoiled?
Fun, shiny artifacts.
Yeah. Yeah. Artifacts is cool. That's what I picked up from it too. A lot of people have postulated that, oh, the Phyrexians are coming. The Phyrexians are coming. But if you look at it, because it's the Inventor's Fair, this set, it's people from all over the multiverse showing off their cool knickknacks and their little toys. You've actually got things from all the artifact-based planes. So you've got old Mirror artifacts, you've got Phyrexian stuff, you've got Dominarian stuff, you've got Kaladeshi original stuff. It's just super cool. And from what I can tell, unlike the other artifact-based sets, this hasn't destroyed magic to its very core.
Well, not yet. We don't know.
That's true. When Standard hits, we might find out if we've still got a game left or not.
I don't know. I didn't see an Umezawa's Jitte or Skull Clamp floating around anywhere yet.
No, you did. They were just only one in every 144 boosters.
Oh.
Yeah. See, those. I don't know if Gia was, but I think Skull Clamp's been done as a masterpiece. But anyway, without further ado, we're not a show talking about Standard. We've got some legendary creatures to talk about, haven't we, fellas?
Yep.
And I think it's only right that one of you two filthy green players starts with this filthy green card.
I'll go. All right. I'm going to mispronounce the name, but it's Ovaya Pashiri, Sage Lifecrafter. It only costs one green mana for a legendary creature, human artificer. 1/2. Pay 2 and a green, tap, create a 1/1 colorless servo artifact creature token. Or pay 4 green and tap, create an XX colorless construct artifact creature token, where X is of the number of creatures you control.
She's a 1/2. It's kind of like Rhys, isn't it?
Kind of like Rhys, except you lose the tribal part of the card. I don't think there's too much of a servo theme going on yet where that would be totally relevant. Does have one more toughness, so a little bit more survivable. And where Rhys just makes little dudes, you can make one giant hulky monstrosity if you so desire.
Yeah. But you need a bunch of little dudes first.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think she's going to be... Because green artifacts isn't an archetype, is it, that works very well. So I think she'll be... Is that a thing? Green normally destroys artifacts.
Well, Glissa...
Yeah, that's black artifact recursion, yeah. Really, though.
But as standalone green commander by herself, I think I will try it, but it's going to end up in the 99 somewhere.
I think she'll be cool. I think she'll be cool in Rhys. Rhys the Redeemed, by the way, listeners.
Yeah, she's only one green, so you don't lose much.
Yeah, 1/2, early game blocker. No, I quite like her, but not as a commander, but I think in the 99 she's grand. Ooh, can I take the next one?
Sure.
I'm actually going to brew this one. Gonti, Lord of Luxury. 2/2 black for a legendary creature, Aetherborn Rogue. He's a 2/3 with Death Touch. I already like him. When Gonti, Lord of Luxury, enters the battlefield, Look at the top four cards of target opponent's library. Exile one of them, face down. Then put the rest of the bottom of that library in a random order. For as long as that card remains exiled, you may look at it, and you may cast it, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any type to cast it. Now, interesting thing there, mana of any type rather than mana of any color. Eh? First time we've seen that.
So is energy considered a mana type then?
Nope.
No, but it does mean if you flip over someone's Kozilek Great Distortion, you can cast it.
You can make colorless mana.
Yeah, he can make colorless mana, not just generic mana. I think he's pretty cool. If you just want... I mean, there are better mono-black commanders, like Sheldred, Drana, Chainer, you know, just to think of three. But I think if you're trying to build a mono-black deck that is sort of like a Dimir deck that steals crap out of your opponent's library, he's great. I'd certainly put him in all those decks. I wish he was 2/1 blue/1 black. If he was 2/1 blue/1 black, I'd be brewing like three decks of him already.
Mm.
And he feels like a Dimir card. He's even got blue lights under his skin. Yeah, so anyone's opinion on him?
I think he's going to be okay, and I think he will end up in a lot of Dimir decks, at least from what I'm looking at it.
I'm guessing he has the same issue as Yuleva in that the cards that you exile with him, if he's removed from the board, then I don't think you have access to those cards anymore.
You're correct. Cards, essentially, it was described to me by a high-level judge, cards do not have a memory. And whenever a card moves zone, unless it has ability that specifically states otherwise, like Skullbriar, it forgets everything else it had on it. So he would forget that he had that card exiled face down with that ability. It would just be a permanently exiled face down card after that.
Which is okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, exile a choice card out of an opponent's deck. You know, if you get someone's Avacyn, that's worth four mana, isn't it?
Hmm.
I just think he's... I think he's grand. I think he's a solid B. Anyway, next we get our Thopter Queen, Nate.
Pia Nalar, 2 and a red. Legendary creature, human artificer, 2/2. When Pia Nalar enters the battlefield, create a 1/1 colorless Thopter artifact creature token with flying. 1 and a red. Target artifact creature gets +1/+0 until end of turn. And if you pay 1 and sacrifice an artifact, target creature can't block this turn.
I don't think this is the Thopter Queen we were all hoping for.
No. It's the Thopter Princess.
We will, I guess, wait until Aether Revolt's out. Because I don't want to sound silly saying, rah, rah, rah. And we weren't. I mean, I know we joke that we were promised a Thopter Queen, but we weren't really, were we? Before we start to believe our own stupid lie.
Yeah, that didn't sound silly at all.
Yeah. She's just not very good. Sorry. If she was 1 red, like the same as Oiva Pashiri, or Via Pashiri, sorry, I think she'd be grand. Like for a 2/2, which gives you a flying thing. Or even a red and a 1, but 3...
If you got more tokens out of it, I think it would be okay, but...
Like, she's half of Pia and Kieran Nalar, essentially, and nobody plays with them. So why are you only going to play with half of it?
Well, some people do.
Nobody I've ever played against, and I play hundreds of games of this format.
Let's check EDH Rec.
Yeah.
So on EDH Rec, they have about 70,000 decks right now. The number of decks with Pia and Kieran Nalar as the commander is a total of 22.
There we go. Okay. Right. Excellent. That doesn't mean it's bad, because like Kira Great Glass Spinner is one of my most powerful decks, and there's only like 35 of them on EDH Rec at the time of recording, so there you go. Padim, Consul of Innovation. He is a legendary creature, a Vedalken Artificer. He's a 1/4 for 3 and a blue. Artifacts you control have hexproof. Very nice. At the beginning of your upkeep, if you control the artifact with the highest converted mana cost or tied for the highest converted mana cost, draw a card. Awesome flavor text that simply says, impress me.
So all of the legendary mono-colored creatures in this set so far, except for the black one, are artificers, I just noticed.
Yes, the black one is an Aetherborn, which is, so he is artifice himself.
We haven't seen a mono-white, so that may come in Aether Revolt, may not. But I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So Padim's great. Like, the decks that are artifact heavy tend to have blue in, and he giving all of them hexproof is fantastic.
Yep.
He's really good. Yeah. I don't think he's very good as a commander, because I think we mentioned in our last episode Muzio and
Memnarch
and Arkham Daxum are better, but I think he goes into all those decks and Sidri. He's good.
Yep.
Now we get onto the powerful ones. Nick, do you want to take this next card? Because this one, I think, is going to be a real commander.
Maybe. It's called Reshmi Eternity's Crafter. It is a legendary creature elf druid. 2 green and blue for a 2/3. Whenever you cast your first spell of each turn, reveal the top card of your library. If it's a non-land card with converted mana cost less than that spell's, you may cast it without paying its mana cost. If you don't cast the revealed card, put it into your hand. So, there is a lot going on here, and it is all excellent.
Oh.
It says each turn, so not your own. You can do it on anybody's turn around the board. So, all the more reason to be playing your Prophet of your Seedborn Muse.
Well, I think if you look at some of the more expensive counter spells like Desertion and Aether Snatch and those sort of things as well. Uh-huh.
You know.
Yeah. But the good part about it, it's a cascade effect. And sort you of. Don't even have to, it's kind of cascade, kind of Quailing Oracle, where if it is higher than a converted mana cost, or if you just don't want to cast it, you can put it into your hand instead.
Everything on this card's good. The fact she's an elf makes her particularly good, because people run her as a commander for elf tribal, or in elf tribal. She is amazing. She's just so good. She's like a slightly fairer Maelstrom Wanderer that's only 4 mana and does it for each spell you cast. I mean, if you're running it, as Nick alluded to, with like Flash as your sort of primary ability of the deck, you're just getting nothing but value. The worst you're getting is drawing a card every time you cast the first spell in a turn. Wowzers. Sensational. If that's the worst you're getting, is a card, free card draw.
Yeah, isn't there a mono blue commander, or is it commander that does that from the Commander 15 set?
From the Commander 15 set.
Isn't there one where it says the first spell you cast, you may draw a card?
Thinking of Jorian. She's Izzet colored, yeah. And she was from Battle for Zendikar. But, I mean, she's 1 mana less to cast for a 2/2. She's red and blue, so it doesn't have the green in her. And you don't get to cascade.
Yeah. The worst scenario of this card is that card.
Exactly.
And it's not bad.
Yeah, I think she's going to be great. So moving along to a card that when I read it, I instantly got my ears pricked up. Nate, would you like to read this one?
Kambal, Council of Allocation. You go there, you go there, you go over there. 1 white-black. Legendary creature, human advisor. These advisors are becoming trouble.
Advisor Tribal, I tell you, it's going to be a thing.
He's a 2/3. Whenever an opponent casts a non-creature spell, that player loses 2 life and you gain 2 life.
He has friends in both places. He's a very unassuming card.
Yeah. So I brewed a deck around this, and Sean brewed a deck around this, and we can probably get half an episode just comparing our decks.
Yeah, I think we went for very similar sort of taxes theme, like polluted bonds, painful quandary type effects, just making everything your opponents play hurt them. The problem with those decks, I find, is that they tend to, because I had a Mogis deck that was similar, they tend to draw a lot of hate for not doing too much damage. But I think Kambal, because he's in white rather than Rakdos, rather than red.
Yeah.
I think he's pretty unassuming. The 2 life, people are going to ignore it first until they're 10 spells in. So
yeah, okay.
You have a window there to build up a board.
Look at his art, right? I want you to imagine his clothes and his cape are red. And instead of that little gold hat, he's got like a red Russian colonel's hat on. And tell me that's not M. Bison from Street Fighter.
He doesn't have the build for it.
Of course.
He would need linebacker shoulders.
Hang on. Right. Raul Julia didn't have the build for it, and he played him with a near perfect performance. And a role so bad it killed the poor man.
Yeah. So if you like Rurik Thar as a concept, but you don't like the colors, try Combal.
Yeah. Mini Rurik. I guess I'll take this last fart of a card. Dipala, Pilot Exemplar, 1 and a Boros, so a red and a white. She's a 3/3 legendary creature dwarven pilot. Other dwarves you control get +1/+1, so she's a dwarf lord. Each vehicle you control gets +1/+1 as long as it's a creature, so she's a vehicle lord. And whenever Dipala Pilot Exemplar becomes tapped, you may pay X. If you do, reveal the top X cards of your library, put all dwarf and vehicle cards from among them into your hand, then put the rest onto the bottom of your library in a random order. I would be more impressed if dwarf tribal was more of a thing.
I mean, they are becoming more of a thing.
They're all white, and there's a couple of red ones.
Dwarves are mostly red.
Oh, no, the new ones, loads of them are white.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there's only about 30 or so dwarves before Kaladesh in these colors. It isn't really enough to make a good tribal deck by itself.
No. So, she's one for the future, I think. Oh, one for you Vorthos people who really have always desperately wanted to do dwarves. Why?
Yeah, I would take another look at it after Aether Revolt and see if we get any more to go with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If we do, that second ability is going to be quite strong because it's basically, you know, pay X and draw a bunch of cards.
Yeah.
Which Boros is lacking in right now. It's one of its weakest points.
Yeah.
Vehicle Tribal could be pretty good. We're using white to generate tokens.
Yeah, if you want to roleplay a Furiosa deck, this is your commander.
Well, if we're talking vehicles, do we want to talk? Because that's all the legendary creatures from the set. I think there's some really good ones, there's some pretty bad ones, and there's some okay ones, which is, I suppose, what we want, isn't it? Because if they were all Stone Cold Bombs, people would go, oh, power creep, it's all over. And I'm sure there's some stuff there that we've brushed over and gone, no, I don't think that's very good, which people will get a lot of love out of. Like Ishkanar, I think, is a pretty bad card, but I know there's a load of people that love doing Spider Tribal and stuff.
I like Ishkanar.
For example, my friend Nick Jaragrulski really likes Ishkanar.
Do you like Ishkanar because you like spiders?
I like tokens.
Yeah.
Ishkanar likes tokens. I like Arachnogenesis. Ishkanar likes Arachnogenesis.
Yeah, but that's kind of all the deck is, though.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's enough.
Well, I've played against Ishkanar many times now, and it's done nothing but be one of the first two people to die in each game. Basically nothing. So, as we've mentioned vehicles in mentioning Dipala. Oh, by the way, I'm sorry, Shivan Butt, for mispronouncing all these names. You're just going to have to correct me at a later date. Do you want to talk about one of your picks, which is a vehicle, Nate?
Sure. Basically, I only like one vehicle so far. And it's the big one, Sky Sovereign Console Flagship. 5 colorless legendary artifact vehicle. It's a 6/5 with flying. Whenever this thing enters the battlefield or attacks, it deals 3 damage to target creature or planeswalker an opponent controls. Not players, That's a downside.
It hoses planeswalkers, though.
Yeah. It has crew 3, so you tap any number of creatures you control with total power 3 or more. You don't necessarily need 3 creatures, you just need something with 3 power or more. And then this vehicle becomes a creature until end of turn.
So Dipala drives it on her own.
Yep.
Yeah. So the vehicle mechanic, I mean, that is probably the best one. There's one that essentially acts like Ball Lightning, which is like a 5/1 with trample, which I thought was okay.
Yeah. And note that if the vehicle is destroyed, the crew is not. The crew survives.
Yeah, the crew, it's just a tap ability.
Yeah, they climb out of the burning wreckage and run for the hills.
Rules thing, kids, you can tap to crew a vehicle even if you have summoning sickness. Because it's the crew ability on the vehicle that's making your creature tap, not the tap on itself.
It's the vehicle, yeah.
It's kind of a way. Vehicles are kind of a way of giving things haste in a strange roundabout kind of way. Yeah. I'm yet to be sold on vehicles. We'll wait and see with Aether Revolt. There's some interesting ones, but nothing that's made me go, yeah, I want to tap down creatures to make that work.
Yeah.
I'd rather them just be creatures. So that's your number 5 pick, Mr. Burgess. Mr. Jaragrulski, what's your number 5 pick?
My number 5 pick is Fateful Showdown. It is a red instant, 2/2 red. Fateful Showdown deals damage to target creature or player equal to the number of cards in your hand. discard all the cards in your hand, then draw that many cards. So this card is only going to be powerful in certain types of decks. The one I have in mind for myself is my Felden deck, who doesn't care if the cards are in your hand or in your graveyard. He can abuse them in either place. And sometimes you just want the cards in your hand and your graveyard to abuse them that much faster. So it's probably going to replace one of the wheel effects that I have in there right now, because I don't like other people at the table getting a chance to, you know, see more of their library also. So I'm a big fan of the card.
Yeah, it's going to show up in Niv-Mizzet. It's going to show up in Arjun the Shifting Flame.
It probably goes in Nekusar.
Well,
it's still a way to get more of your draw effects out of there.
Vorthos, your question with this card. Right, so the flavor text. Tonight in the Grand Exhibition, witness Head Judge Tezzeret face off against the infamous renegade Pierre Nalar. Does Tezzeret done over Chandra before? Why is Pierre going after Tezzeret?
I haven't read that part of the story, so I'm not the person to ask.
Yeah, maybe it's just an arena demonstration.
Oh, I don't know. It's a fateful showdown.
Or it could be a revolutionary challenge.
Yeah, and if that's Tezzeret in the artwork, he looks very different to what he used to look like. He looks like a man wearing a nice frock now. Look at him.
He's settled down. He's got a nice job and a pension.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good card, though. But Vorthosy, it piques my interest, which I suppose what the flavor text is meant to do in these things. So my number five pick, I've gone for something quite specific, I guess. I've gone for Aether Flux Reservoir. So, this is an artifact for 4 mana. Whenever you cast a spell, you gain 1 life for each spell that you've cast this turn. So, gain life storm, essentially. Potentially, you can infinite loop out with that in numerous ways and gain infinite life. Pay 50 life. Aether Flux Reservoir deals 50 damage to target creature or player. Well, you know, whenever you build a life gain deck, people always ask the question, don't they, lads? How does it win? Well, here's one of the ways it wins. Quite easily, like...
It's a good card, but I think you either need to use it on your last opponent or make sure you have a very padded life total. Because let's say you have 65 life, you're spending most of it to take out one player, and then you're sitting at 15. You just need to make sure it's your ace in the hole to end out the game, not just pick off the first opponent you see.
Yeah, it's something you hold until you're going to end the game with it.
So, with Children of Corliss, this is kill two players, which is a white creature for 1, sacrifice it, gain the amount of life you've lost this turn. Pay 50 life, kill 1 person, sacrifice the children, get your 50 life back. Pay 50 life, kill someone.
I mean, you can use this with Eternity Vessel and just landfall your life total back up a bunch of times and kill everybody that way.
This is why it's a good card, because on its own, you're right, Nick, you have to buffer your life or it's quite risky, but it combos out with so many things. It just says, yeah, okay, I'm going to keep flipping my life total. Like Beacon of Immortality, double your life total. Well, I cast Beacon of Immortality when I've got an Aether Flux Reservoir out. I kill 2 people. Honestly, it's a super powerful card. This is your life gain deck's kill switch. And if someone's playing Aloro, Ailey, Karlov, Selvala, the original Selesnya Selvala, you need to keep an eye out for this card dropping, because it's going to go bazonkers. But yeah, anyway, that's my pick number 5. Nate, what's your number 4 choice?
All right, this card, it's not amazing, but it's going to show up in certain decks. Contraband Kingpin, blue and a black. Creature, Aetherborn Rogue. He's a 1/4 with lifelink, so he's already a decent cheap blocker. Whenever an artifact enters the battlefield under your control, scry 1.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so you're going to see this in Sindri decks.
Yeah, so any deck which can loop an artifact in and out, basically this becomes a tutor for your deck to find the card you want. Sindri has got a ton of ways of doing it. It's a good card, Nate.
It's Dimir, though.
Yeah? You say that like it's a bad thing.
Well, now that you mention it.
Hey! Shut up, gruel boy. It's because we do things with sophistication and intelligence rather than me angry and full of power and toughness, smashy, smash, smash. Rawr.
No, I think it'll be fine.
Yeah. For the mana, he's not as good as a Baleful Strix. He's probably not going to show up as often as Fathom Feeder either. But he'll probably come in third in a few of my decks.
Yeah, 2-drop Dimir creatures with tagged on abilities is nice. Mr. Jared Grulski, what's your number 4 pick?
Speaking of big smashy, we got Combustible Gearhulk.
Oh, yeah.
4 and 2 red for a artifact creature construct, 6/6 with first strike. So right there, I mean, he's a Titan cycle, and that's fine. But where I really like the card is the text. When Combustible Gearhulk enters the battlefield, target opponent may have you draw 3 cards. If they do not, put the top 3 cards of your library into your graveyard. Then Combustible Gearhulk deals damage to that player equal to the total converted mana cost of those 3 cards.
Mm-hmm.
You get to make a choice. Neither of them's good for you.
All terrible choices. And again, this will be a card that goes into Felden. You can allow me to draw 3 cards or put 3 cards into my graveyard that will be instantly abused. And you take, we'll say, 10 damage.
Yeah. Mm. For me, this is going to go into that category of red creatures with Inferno Titan and Molten Primordial. In just really good, well-costed red creatures with aggressive abilities that you want to have, and they just slot into decks perfectly.
Yeah. And if you're playing Eldrazi Titan Tribal, then, hey, he'll do 20 damage to you if you don't let him draw 3 cards.
Does this go into your Rakdos deck?
I was about to say Rakdos, Nate.
Would he go into Rakdos? If he was 5 and a single red, he'd probably go in. But the double red makes him not as appealing.
Okay.
So, Sean, what's your favorite Gearhulk?
Well, I've actually got 2 on my top picks for the whole set, so I'll pick my least favorite of the 2 I've chosen, so my 2nd favorite overall, I guess, which is Noxious Gearhulk, which is 4 and 2 black for a 5/4 with Menace. When Noxious Gearhulk enters the battlefield, you may destroy another target creature. If a creature is destroyed this way, you gain life equal to its toughness. So that is a 5/4 with, which is hard to block, that destroys a creature and gains you some life. That is high quality for 6 mana.
Mm.
Like, it's not flashy, it's not tricksy, it's just power. I think, like the red one that I mentioned, it's going to go in decks like in that sort of Grave Titan Sepulchral Primordial slot of just a value card for 6 mana that does a load of stuff.
And I like that it says target creature, not target non-black creature. Black doesn't get too much of that, so...
Yeah, that's why murder is worth paying the additional 1 for.
I like that it says enters the battlefield.
Oh, yeah. Get a, what's it called, Deadeye Navigator locked onto this and you're having fun. Having so much fun. Conjurer's Closet, every turn, bam, kill something. Bam, kill something. Gain life.
Hey, it goes well with your other card, Aetherflux Reservoir, gaining all that life.
It does discards going into Aelie as well, because worst comes to the worst, it's like gaining me probably 10 life.
Yep.
And then I can recur it from the yard. Yep. Great card. Not much more to say about it, though. So what's your number 3 pick, Mr. Nate?
Well, let's finish out our Gearhulk selection.
Oh, okay. We can go back up the list then. So... probably my number 3 card of the whole set is the blue one, Torrential Gearhulk. 4 and 2 blue for a 5/6 with Flash. When Torrential Gearhulk enters the battlefield, you may cast target instant card from your graveyard without paying its mana cost. If that card will be put into your graveyard this turn, exile it instead. Someone witty coined this card, Fatcaster Mage.
Mm.
It's sensational. You know, if you're running any kind of counter spells... it's a 5/6 counter spell. It's just brilliant. You can do so many things. There's no upper limit on that cost. So, you know, if there's some expensive instance out there that you want to rip off, it's just fantastic. The other thing you can do with it, I don't know, drop it in, cast Evacuation from your graveyard with it, return it to your hand. I know the Evacuation gets exiled, but you get to do it again turn afterwards. It's great.
Yeah, and if somebody's playing it against you, make sure and you watch that they're not trying to sneak in sorceries.
Yes, because that will happen.
Yeah, I didn't read that the first time I saw the card. So, be on the lookout.
So, Nate, I think to finish our Gear Hulks, you should do, yeah.
So my number three pick is my favorite Gear Hulk. Cataclysmic Gear Hulk. 3 white-white. Artifact creature construct 4/5 vigilance. Eh. When Cataclysmic Gear Hulk enters the battlefield, each player chooses an artifact, a creature, an enchantment, and a planeswalker from among the non-land permanents he or she controls, then sacrifices the rest. Get out.
So it casts the spell Cataclysm, but doesn't kill lands, so it's like a fair Cataclysm.
A fair Cataclysm.
It is. And it's cheaper than the some of the other Gear Hulks. All the others are 6. This one's only 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you design your deck with a variety of things, instead of trying to focus on one single thing like a lot of artifacts or a lot of creatures, if you're spreading it around, then throw this guy in here and you're going to screw somebody over.
Oh, it's good.
And he can be your artifact or creature that you keep.
Yeah, he can. I didn't even think about that, Nick. Good point. So you can end up with 2 creatures.
Yeah, so make a deck with a few artifacts, a few creatures, a few enchantments, and a few planeswalkers.
Very nice.
And then somebody else is going to lose out.
So, Nick, what's your number 3 pick?
My number 3 pick is going to be a planeswalker, Nissa Vital Force.
Ooh.
She is 3/2 green. She starts with 5 loyalty counters. And her +1 says untap target land you control. Until your next turn, it becomes a 5/5 elemental creature with haste. It's still a land. -3, return target permanent card from your graveyard to your hand. So basically Eternal Witness for -3. Or -6, you get an emblem with whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you may draw a card.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's pretty good.
And I will point out that the ultimate is only 1 loyalty point away from its base loyalty, so it's going to be pretty easy to achieve.
Oh, so in a Selesnya deck, or a Bant deck, I guess, Oath of Gideon makes this come down an ultimate immediately.
Boom.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Excellent point.
That's going to be in standard.
Ugh.
Just to put that into perspective. There you go. That is an amazing... I think that's the best Nissa they've printed yet.
It's pretty good.
All of those abilities are great. The +1's not amazing.
If you have a Cabal Coffers, it's pretty good.
True. I've never been a big fan of any ability that animates land, because essentially you're making your most valuable resource susceptible to death.
Yeah. If you have a Gaia's Cradle, it's pretty good.
But other than that, she's great. The +1, then automatically, you only need 1 rotation before she ultimates, and that emblem's really, 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 really good for green.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you're doing any landfall shenanigans, it's a fantastic card.
So, Nate, what's your number 2 pick?
Demon of Dark Schemes.
Ooh, oh, ah, ah,
3
ah.
black. It's a new demon, creature demon, 5/5 with flying. When Demon of Dark Schemes enters the battlefield, all other creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn. Get out of here. And whenever another creature dies, you get an energy counter. That's the first time we've talked about these.
That is.
Now, if you have 2 and a black mana, you can pay 4 of these energy counters and put target creature card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. Tapped. So out of all the energy counter cards, and it's like poison counters. They just accumulate per player, except you can spend these for certain effects, depending on what card you use.
And you don't die when you've got 10 of them.
Yeah. So out of all the energy counter cards, this is the one that I like the most.
I would agree with you 100%.
So does this replace Massacre Worm, or is it Massacre Worm 2.0?
Oh, it doesn't replace Massacre Worm, but it goes into the same decks Massacre Worm goes into.
Yeah, it doesn't. Nothing replaces Massacre Worm. But I mean, if you dump one of these and then write replication it, the ensuing death followed by energy counters is quite funny.
If you do that, they'll all kill each other, though.
Yeah, but it's not like you're not in a color that's not going to pull one of the original back, is it?
Well.
Okay, even if you don't kick the Rai replication, if you just clone him once, the ensuing death followed by double energy tokens is going to be pretty funny.
Funny. Mm-hmm.
But there you go. There's an insight into my mind of what I think is funny.
Yeah. I'd clone him once.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's a, I agree. He's good. My number two. Another planeswalker. Oh, no, it's Nick's number two. What am I talking about? I'll go, though. Then we can go back up, as I've already started. My number two.
Hey.
All right, Nick's number two.
Out of the way.
No, go ahead, Sean.
No, I insist.
All right. Well, my number two is not a planeswalker. I'm going to be talking about another card that we will mispronounce. Gira Pure Orrery.
Each player.
Yeah, it's terrible. Don't listen to me.
Gira Pure, I believe.
Gira Pure. Each player may play an additional land in each of his or her turns.
Mm. Yay!
At the beginning of each player's upkeep, if that player has no cards in hand, that player draws three cards.
Yay!
So, it is a bear hug card, but I think if you're playing it in a deck that is synergizing around it, it's going to be a very powerful card.
I think I might...
It helps everyone.
It does. I might cut Font of Mythos out of my Eldrazi deck and put this in its place. Hmm.
I might use it in Nath of the Guilt Leaf because I need players to discard, and they need to have cards in their hand to discard. Because sometimes Nath just works too well and nobody ever has cards.
Yes, I can see that being a problem. I like it. I think it's good. I think it's a card that if you play it, no one's going to hate you for it. But if you're subtle enough, you can really abuse it and get a lot of value out of it. And it's the beginning of each player's upkeep if that player has no cards in hand. Oh, sorry, it's that player. Ignore me. I was about to say you get to dump your hand on each player and keep redrawing, but that would be incorrect. Mm-hmm. But it's still a good card. Very good card. So my number two, another Planeswalker. Our first ever Verdulkan Planeswalker. Dovin Bahn. 2, a white and a blue. For a Planeswalker, Dovin, 3 loyalty. +1 until your next turn. After one target creature gets -3/-0, and its activated abilities can't be activated.
Hey.
Yeah.
My commander uses those.
Yes. His -1. You gain 2 life and draw a card. I mean, that's pretty solid. And it's only -1, not -2. It just replaces the card from your hand with him. -7, so it's going to take a bit of work to get there, but as I've proven, that Azorius and Esper are the colours of getting your Planeswalkers to ultimate. Forget doubling season. -7, you get an emblem with, and everyone loves this. Your opponents can't untap more than 2 permanents during their untap step. That emblem basically says you win. I've got a locked on... Not Winter Orb.
Static Orb.
I've got a locked on Static Orb that can't be destroyed.
Yep. Start writing your Seaborn Muses, people.
That's true. That is a fantastic Planeswalker. And is going right into my Esper Super Friends deck to make it Dirtle even harder.
So in the stories about him, they say that he can detect the flaw in any artifact, but none of his abilities have anything to do with destroying artifacts.
Or artifacts at all.
Yeah. So
he looks very sci-fi. He looks like a bit like a blue version of Martian Manhunter, I think.
Yeah, or a blue version of the Doctor standing in a TARDIS.
Yeah, he's very science fiction, which is, I guess, cool for a set like Kaladesh. Because when I think ancient Indian culture, I think science fiction. That one's for you, Shivan. Okay, so what is your number one card in this set, Nate?
Oh, this one has a really cool picture on it of somebody who I hope we see more of in the next set, but this card has really nothing to do with that guy himself. Insidious Will, 2 blue-blue, instant, choose one, counter target spell.
Ooh.
Okay. Or you can choose new targets for target spell.
Ooh.
Hey, I like that. Or you can copy target instant or sorcery spell, and you may choose new targets for the copy.
Oh, very nice.
Is blue dabbling in red now?
Yeah. I like playing Wild Ricochet in a lot of my mono red decks, at least. And this card does You know, in certain situations, you might not want to counter a spell. You want to have one for yourself.
Now, you say there is the blue Dali in red. They've done that sort of thing before with Twincast and stuff.
Yeah, for copying spells. It's kind of mostly red, but blue can do it too.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's the other way around.
Blue is the... Blue is a secondary. So I think this card's fine. I think if it was two, a red and a blue, it'd be unplayable. You know, those colors don't need this effect so much. But that's a fantastic card. The artwork is brilliant. We meet again, Pyromancer. Boral, Chief of Compliance. And he's the guy that was about to execute Chandra when her spark ignited. And if you look at his face, he's taken off his little lattice mask. And his face is all melted.
Supreme Leader Snoke.
Like Supreme Leader Fett.
Like Boba Fett.
Yeah. And, it's a bit of revengeance. And he's going to be the leader of the Aether Cabal, whatever they're called. The consulate. The guys that are basically the English Empire in the Kaladesh story.
The bad guys.
Yeah, they're the English Empire. The British Empire, I should say, sorry. I'm looking forward to this story.
So maybe if there's a legendary creature, Boral, in the next set, he might be...
blue and black.
Yeah, he's looking pretty blue and black there.
Oh, he is. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
And do you know what? There's no Eldrazi in this set. Oh, it's lovely. Yeah. No Eldrazi.
There's Gearhulks.
Oh, Gearhulks are amazing. Nick, what is your number one pick for this set?
My number one pick is another Planeswalker. We have Chandra, Torch of Defiance.
Oh.
2 and 2 red for a 4 loyalty counter Planeswalker. 2+1 abilities. The first says, exile the top card of your library. You may cast that card. If you don't, Chandra, Torch of Defiance deals 2 damage to each opponent.
So you got to decide right then and there. You can't save it until later in the turn.
True. Yep, you have to cast it right then and there, I believe. Or +1, add 2 red to your mana pool. So if you choose this as your starting selection, she basically costs 2 red mana for the turn, and you're getting a discount.
Oh, no. She essentially costs 2 generic mana for the turn.
Oh, that's true. 2 generic mana. Yeah. Or -3, she deals 4 damage to target creature. Or -7, you get an emblem with, whenever you cast a spell, this emblem deals 5 damage to target creature or player.
Oh.
So, yeah. Put this into your storm decks.
So Chandra the Mind Sculptor. Chandra the Mind Sculptor. I thought that the last Chandra was the best Chandra. The hand cycling one that created a couple of elementals. Chandra, the
Flame Caller?
Flame Caller, yeah. This is a sensationally good card, and I get a feeling it's going to see play in standard and other formats. So if you pull one, I'd keep hold of it, because I reckon this is going to go pricey.
Yeah, the last Chandra went up there in price for a while. I'm not sure if she still is, but this one is even better, so you're absolutely right. Hold on to it and make use of it.
And that art is sensational. I think it's intentionally a similar pose to Jace the Mind Sculptor as well. So you've got a flat-on image of the sort of mid-drift upwards of the Planeswalker, sort of using their coloured magic in a plume around their body. Now, hers is going over the back of her head, and Jace's is arcing in front of his body, but it's very similar artwork.
I think she might be the only Planeswalker since him also to start with 4 loyalty counters, if I'm not mistaken.
Start with 4 or have 4 abilities?
Both.
4 abilities, there's Garruk Apex Predator.
Okay.
Yeah, that is a fantastic card. The only other Planeswalker, because I'll spoil it now, it's not my number one pick that we've not spoken about, is Saheeli Rai. I don't think she's very good for Commander. Very quickly go over abilities just so we can say we've discussed all the Planeswalkers. But she is... Where she is? She's 3 loyalty Planeswalker for 1 and an Izzet. Planeswalker Saheeli comes in +1, scry 1, and she deals 1 damage to each opponent. Minus 2, create a token that's a copy of a target artifact or creature. You gain so a creature you control, except it's an artifact in addition to its other types. And then it gains haste, and you exile it at the end of the end step. So minus two, she splinter twin something can be an artifact. That's minus two, though. And minus seven, which is a lot of scrying to get there. Search your library for up to three artifact cards, all with different names. You put them onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. That's good. But gang, there's going to be hard work.
Yeah, hard work to get there, and unless you're going to abuse of the minus two ability by going infinite with it, it's just okay.
Yeah, not convinced. But so my number one pick, and now we've talked about all the planeswalkers, Panharmonicon. Four mana for an artifact. If an artifact or creature entering the battlefield causes a trigger ability of a permanent you control to trigger, that ability triggers an additional time.
So the wording on that implies that things would trigger themselves if they have...
Yes, so your Runescar Demon lets you tutor for two cards.
Does Yuleva get twice as many cards from opponent libraries?
Yes. Yes, she will do. Because it's an enter the...
All these enter the battlefield effects trigger twice.
Yep. And it's a four-drop artifact with no color requirement. Your Eternal Witnesses get two cards. Your Avengers Endercar gets double the amount of tokens. And then when you play a land, they get plus two instead of plus one, plus one.
Well, what?
Because a permanent entering the battlefield has caused...
No, it has to be an artifact or creature entering the battlefield. That's
true. Sorry, not land. You don't get double landfall triggers. But your creature, you still get double the amount of tokens. I want to see someone play Avengers Endercar when they got Panharmonicon, Doubling Season, and Parallel Lives on the table at once. So that's times two, times four, times six. Yay!
No, times
six
eight.
Times the amount of land. So times eight, yeah, sorry. Eight times the number of land I have in tokens. It's just going to be a commander staple in so many decks.
Yeah, it is.
I'm surprised a card like this got printed, but I'm also happy a card like this got printed. Does that make sense?
Because you're going to use it.
Yeah, I'm going to use the hell out of it.
I think it's a card they're going to have to monitor the power level on a little closely.
Yeah.
I think if it had a color requirement, that would be fine. But it's not. And it's only four. If it was like six to drop, cast or something. Because you look at a card like, what's a comparable card in recent memory? Alhammeret's Archive, because that doubles things and is an artifact. That's five to cast. And doesn't work on the first card draw you gain in each turn. Doesn't work on the first one you do. It's only your second afterwards. So that's limited. This isn't. This is just play it and go nuts.
So basically you're saying we're going to be talking about this on the watch list in a month.
I think it's going to be Doubling Season level of power.
All right.
I think. Don't know about you. What are your guys' opinions? I enjoy a strong opinion. That's why I guess I do a podcast.
It goes in a lot of decks. I think Yuleva's going to try it out.
And it makes a lot of decks go nuts.
I don't think it works the way you guys think it works. It says triggered abilities, which are entirely separate from ETB abilities.
No, entering the battlefield is a triggered ability.
The whenever, when it says whenever, is a triggered ability.
Whenever is separate from when, which is what an ETB is.
That comes as well. Are ETBs triggered abilities? In fact, if I just put RET, it comes up with it.
Because if it did work the way you guys think it works, I don't think they would have printed it. At least at this rarity level and at this mana cost.
Triggered abilities. I'm reading the rulings now. So, we're still recording. This is interesting for people. Triggered abilities are identified by three keywords, when, whenever, or at. So yes, triggered abilities are enter the battlefield abilities are triggered abilities. Triggered ability is identified by the words when, whenever, or at.
That's interesting. Yeah, this card's busted.
Yep, absolutely busted beyond all comprehension. This is the most powerful card for Commander in this set. In an already full of powerful cards set. This is, I think that's the best way to describe it. This is Doubling Season for triggered abilities. And Doubling Season is
one more mana to cast, has a color requirement, and, well, I mean, just those two things, really, and is getting hard to get hold of because of price. I'm going to be pre-ordering, like, 10 copies of this, because I expect it's going to go up, and I've probably got 4 or 5 decks that want it in it. Hey, you're a red player, Nick. Just load up all your artifact removal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's going in my Sidri deck. Woohoo! Yeah, it's... Now it's dawning on you just how busted this card is.
Just this is only have it say insert evil plan here.
Yeah. So, listeners, message us of the most evil combinations you can think of with Panharmonicon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go. And that, I think, that is like a drop the mic on Kaladesh, that card, I think. We out of here. Yes, exactly. yeah, tweet us if your most busted Panharmonicon combos that you can think of. Oh, God, like, that you can, in Riku, this doubles up the doubling because Riku's abilities are triggered. They trigger when...
Well, something has to enter the battlefield to cause a triggered ability to trigger. That needs to be the cause, so...
I think, isn't Riku cast, I think?
No, Riku's triggered. Riku's a triggered ability.
It's when you cast, though. That's what the trigger is.
Yes, it's when you cast. Triggered abilities are when, whenever, and
but this card says whenever a creature or land causes a triggered ability...
Artifact or creature.
Artifact or creature enters the battlefield, causes it to trigger, but Riku is a cast. The cast causes the trigger on Riku, not the entering the battlefield.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it's going to be one of those cards as well, isn't it?
It's going to cause a lot of confusion, I think.
It's still disgustingly broken. Like, just Brago decks that weren't already powerful enough are just going to go nuts. Delicious.
So a clear example would be Reaper King, right?
Oh, yeah.
He's on the battlefield, and he waits for another Scarecrow to show up. So a Scarecrow is an artifact creature. It's going to enter the battlefield. That causes the triggered ability of the Reaper King to trigger. So he destroys two things for every Scarecrow that shows up.
Yes. When Sun Titan enters the battlefield, return 2 cards. Or any of the Titans. Play Molten Primordial. Molten Primordial almost becomes Insurrection when Panharmonicon's on the table. Sepulchral Primordial is a fairly close approximation of Rise of the Dark Realms when Panharmonicon is on the table. In a 4-player game, you gain grab 6 creatures, 2 from each graveyard. Diluvian Primordial. Oh, when you cast Diluvian Primordial, you can cast 2 instants or sorceries out of each opponent's graveyard.
Hmm.
They're just ridiculous. This card is absolutely ridiculous. And I'm not saying we're the first people to talk about it, not even by a long way, but I haven't heard people talking...
This makes all of your Gear Hulks...
Yep. Oh, Snapcast the Mage allows you, when he comes in, allows you to put Flashback onto 2 of the cards in your yard. Do you know what you can do if you've got a load of cheapo counterspells in your yard? Someone starts taking their god turn, you can go, I'm going to flash in Snappy. Yeah, I'm just going to put these 2 counters, have Flashback to the end of turn. Enjoy your turn. And it doesn't, it's not like the Panharmonicon destroys itself then or anything like that, or you have to pay mana to do it.
Yeah.
To use a lazy broadcaster's idiom, it's like Strionic Resonator on acid. You know, it's bonkers. Anyway, enough about Panharmonicon. We'll see the devastation it causes.
What's going on the art? Is that like a roller coaster ride?
I think it's like a big speaker, isn't it?
It looks like a big harp.
Yeah, I think it's a musical instrument, and that is like a big speaker in the middle of it. So it's like an amplifier. And there's people sitting around to watch a performance. Yeah, it's a musical instrument. Read the flavor text. All who listen hear their own song. Unique melody played just for them. There you go. So, any final thoughts on Kaladesh? There's loads of really good cards we've not even begun to touch. And Phil, on a later episode, might want to add his 5 in or some of the stuff that we feel we've missed. So look forward to that, listeners. You guys, final thoughts on Kaladesh before we close up this long show?
It's all right.
It's all right, isn't it? It's 2-word review. Nick, can you beat 2 words?
It's pretty good.
Excellent.
But no. I think it's going to have an immediate impact on our format, and I'm excited to play with a lot of the cards, not just the five I mentioned for my list.
Yep, me too. I'm excited about the Gear Hulk cycle. I like big cycles like the Souls and the Titans and the Primordials, so we've got a new cool run of them, all at Mythic. I really love that stuff. The new artifacts are bonkers. The art is beautiful. And thank Jace, we have no more Eldrazi.
Oh. Yet. Dun, dun, dun.
Now we got Gear Hulk.
Honestly, I love Wizards of the Coast. I think another Eldrazi set in quick succession, I might start playing the banned game that starts with an H just for a bit to cleanse it out of my system. I'm that done with Eldrazi. Gear Hulks are not Eldrazi. Gear Hulks are way cool. Gear Hulks are giant mech suits that different people of the city of Kaladesh have come together to show off, hey, this is what the people we can build. Hey, this is what we can build. If you look at the art on the Masterpiece ones, it's people showing off their gear and judging it. If you look at the black one, there's a load of Vedolkans saying, hey, look at this cool thing we built.
It's interesting how quickly the public turn on Eldrazi as a creature type. You know, before Battle for Zendikar, they were, oh, Eldrazi! And by the time Eldritch Moon comes around, oh, God, enough with Eldrazi.
Four sets, man.
Four sets, well...
I think they're done with Eldrazi for a while.
Yeah. I mean, eventually, he'll break free of the Hell Vault, I think.
She will break free.
I'm sorry. She'll be breaking free.
Of the Moon Vault.
Of the Moon.
Of the Moon.
Maybe 10 years.
Jace will probably unlock the door by accident, but yeah, 10 years from now, we'll see him again.
Well, the Eldrazi, it turned out, were, not evil. They were planetary cleansers, weren't they? So, Ulamog ate up all the excess mana.
They were just giant Roombas.
And Kozilek reformed the mana into new basic structures, all those weird, block structures and stuff, and Emrakul, rather than distorting things, was actually doing a Prometheus style, bringing new life. So planes that were about to die, the three Eldrazi Titans cleansed them, is how I read it. And when Sorin and the gang accidentally brought the Eldrazi to the wrong plane, to Zendikar, a plane that wasn't about to die, a plane that was very much in the full throes of life, that's when the Eldrazi start going nuts, and the vague communications they had with the Eldrazi were all messages like, we're not meant to be here, this is wrong, and where the people of Zendikar interpreted it as, these things are alien to the world, that isn't what when they said, we're not meant to be here, that isn't what they meant. They meant we're literally in the wrong place. This plane isn't ready for our time.
You called the SWAT team to the wrong house.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think that was cool, but because the two, if BFZ was a three set block, I think I would have been fine, just enough Eldrazi there. But when it went to a fourth set, and it's just like, I can't be bothered with this stuff. And it was the whole, oh, is it Eldrazi, is it Emrakul on Innistrad? Everyone knew it was Emrakul. From the first minute of piece of art we saw, we were like, oh, look, there's a tentacle in that picture. Everyone, it wasn't a surprise, it wasn't a secret. Everyone was like, okay, fine, let's deal with it then. And then when they released that Emrakul card, everyone was just like, yeah, we knew.
Yeah, Jace was the last one to find out.
Exactly. And bear in mind, Wizards...
What's going on?
Wizards see Jace as its core market.
I want to cash in my clue tokens, please.
I spent all my time at the haberdashery getting this coat made. But what's that in the sky? But Wizards see Jace as its core audience in the universe. It sees Jace's, his analytical game playing and all that stuff. They've said before, he represents the average Magic player. And I think they got it wrong there, because Jace didn't know what was going on, but every Magic player knew what was going on. There was no surprise. It's like, okay.
Boo.
Yeah, whereas Kaladesh, opposite. Opposite, opposite, opposite. Kaladesh is funktastic.
Phyrexians.
But it's not just Phyrexians. So you've got Phyrexians, you've got Mirror, you've got... Esperins. Well, I don't know what.
Yeah, but we've seen the symbol in a couple pieces of art. Yeah, I'm calling it now. Acer Revolt.
You've seen Esper filigree on a few pieces of art. The Phyrexians are there because they've called every artificer across the multiverse to come.
Yeah, let's all gather in one place next to this weird guy, Tezzeret.
Well, Tezzeret works for Nicol Bolas, and it's Amon Kett next. So that should give you a clue it's not Phyrexians. It's Nicol Bolas.
Oh. Hey, do you think Liliana's going to show up in Amon Kett?
Always.
She might have something to say with Nicol Bolas there.
Hey, Nick, we need a chat. I don't know about you, but
I think there's some baggage.
I wouldn't want to cross Nicol Bolas.
I want to see Garruk come back. What's he been up to? Just like running around with the chain veil on his head, driving him mad?
No, Liliana's got the veil.
Yeah, and he only had a taste of the chain veil. He wasn't powerful enough to deal with it. Jace has taken the Hedron shard that was in Obnixilus's head and stuck it in Garruk to essentially stop the corruption. So he might have lost his spark, is what's going on with Garruk, or Garruk, or however you want to pronounce that word.
Oh, so that's how they get Nissa to be the new face of green.
Yeah, exactly. And they turned Ajani into his own special thing, so that's why Gideon's now the face of white again, because Gideon was the original face of white, wasn't he? And then it was Elspeth for a bit, but they killed her off. Although I think they'll bring her back one day as a white-black planeswalker. Because we need more white-black planeswalkers. It's very cool, this stuff. And all the people saying it's Phyrexian, it's not. It's a Nicol Bolas set. Tezzeret's the head judge of the Inventor's Fair, and we know we're going to Amon Kett next. Which is, who runs that plane? Oh, Nicol Bolas. Who's Tezzeret's boss? Oh, Nicol Bolas. It'd be very cool. We'll have cool Ushabti, like, construct things. It'll be ace. And not a tentacle in sight.
There might be sandworms. Do they count?
Are we talking June sandworms, or are we talking Beetlejuice sandworms?
Probably both.
Or tremors.
Tremors.
Yeah, all of the above.
Are we eating Carl McLaughlin, Gina Lee Davis, or Kevin Bacon?
All of them. All the worms.
Everything leads back to Kevin Bacon.
Worms are the new Hydras.
Oh, yeah. We've had that. Was it the Skittering Crawler or something? There was a big white worm from an old set that kept disappearing whenever you played another card and was really good in a God of the Polis deck. That was a cool sandworm. Oh, Panharmonicon. Perforous.
Ew.
Just thought I'll give you that.
Take a drink.
Just thought I'll give you that one, fellas. Just think about that for a second. Panharmonicon.
When Panharmonicon and Perforous are on the battlefield at the same time, take two drinks.
Yeah. Ooh. Hey, this has turned into a cool Vorfoss conversation, but I think we should probably wrap it up because listeners might be getting a bit bored of this.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear people's other opinions about what's going to go on. As a resident Phyrexian, I can tell you I don't think the next set's going to be Phyrexian at all. It's going to be Nicol Bolian. It'll be that's why you've got an Esper influence as well, because Tezzeret is from Esper.
Aether Revolt, Rise of the Machines.
Da-da-da-da-da.
Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah. Aether Revolt 2.
If they have more energy counters in the next set, maybe.
So, thanks for tuning in, everybody. If you want to support the podcast and all the good things that we have coming into your ears, head on over to Patreon or give us a 5-star review on iTunes. We love our listeners and we're incredibly grateful to all our patrons. So come and give your gratitude. Come and get your gratitude even. Don't come and give your gratitude. Yes, like we're standing on a mighty palanquin. Worship at our feet. So come and get some gratitude.
Oi,
oi, oi. Oi, 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 oi. Or, of course, you can come playtest with us. Find us on Facebook. Message us there and we'll add you to our playtesting group. And if you donate $10 or more per episode, you can come join our Patreon chat we host over on Facebook, where we give people access to our show plans and they can listen to bits of the show early and get to do cool things like what Nick does and come and be on the show and like what Bradford and Robin have done. So come join us. Anyway, our theme song was created for the podcast by
me,
Nate Burgess.
I do music.
He does. Our logo was created for the podcast by Mr. Picto.co.uk. with assistance from Kelly DeLuca. That's nepotism working for you there. Special thanks to TechWiz's Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank, and also to Justin for his server space. You can reach us by going to our website, which is commanderandmtg.com, and our email is cast@commanderandmtg.com. Find us on all of the social medias by searching for Commander and MTG Podcast, and individually on Twitter, I am at copain26.
I'm at Mr. Plorg.
I'm at Radisnik.
And Phil, who will be back with us shortly, is at Ketjak. K-E-T-J-A-K. And Nate, could you do the honors?
May your show be devoured by the hounds of hell.
Yeah, no.
I think my dogs wanted to chime in.
Nick, as always, is being eaten by dogs. Adios, listeners. Tatty bye. I think that it's an amusing idea, but the thing, if he said, bring me Han Solo, or I'm from New Zealand, this is a lot, actually that's a pretty obvious New Zealand accent, it's a like somewhere between Australian and South African New Zealand accent. Yes, so it's more like this. Hello, my name is Grandmaster Snoke. Bonza. Listeners, if you can do a better Kiwi accent than my one, then you're literally anybody else. He wasn't from New Zealand, and Boba Fett is from New Zealand.
I always thought Snoke had happened to him what happened to Deadpool, put in that chamber and deprived of oxygen. His face looks pretty similar, if you ask me.
I'm a big believer that Ray, is a Kenobi rather than a Skywalker. So, in the Clone Wars cartoons, which are canon, they're one of the few things that remained canon, Obi-Wan nearly gives up being a Jedi to get it on with a special lady. I reckon he's fathered a couple of kids, illegitimate children on Tatooine, who have had kids themselves, because she'd have to be his great-granddaughter. But I reckon she's a Kenobi.
Was he a postman?
Well, like your father, Nick. Twinkle in his eye as he skipped down to deliver his special delivery. Okay, so in conclusion, Kylo Ren is actually a good guy. Finn is a Force user. They're double bluffing you. Poe Dameron is a Imperial agent, and Snoke is Boba Fett.
I'm calling it now. Snoke is Boba Fett. Actually, I called it a while ago, but I didn't tell anybody.
Well, we're documenting it here on this day as an original idea.